food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, October 2nd, 2013. Once again, thank you for joining the program today. Lots and lots of things to talk about today. We're going to get started right away with the market reports. Let's get to the gold and silver numbers today. We have gold up about almost $29 at $1,317, off its high of $1,325. So almost 10 bucks higher than where we were today. We have silver up 60 cents today at $21.87. High on silver today, $22.14. Platinum today is up 9 at $1,397. And we have palladium up a buck at $723. We'll talk about the markets today here in just a little bit. The USDX today to me is the biggest drop, 0.30 at 79.88, breaking through that 80 level. We'll see if it stays down here below 80 for any length of time. It just shocked me to see, you know, having this break 80 and you have $30 move in gold. You know, with the past 2 days, you should have seen gold up 150. And the market's down probably 1,000 plus with what's going on. But what's really weird, and we'll talk, and Al, I'll bring this up right now before we get to the paper markets. I've been noticing this over a period of time. It's like all the action in the markets are done early in the morning, then they just become stagnant for the rest of the day. Not a lot of movement, not a lot of changes. So you might see a few ticks here and there, but the big moves are come early. And I know there was always a big move in the markets between 11:30 to 1. You know, to me, it was always the West Coast opening up and so forth, so you'd have a lot of action at that point in time. But we're not even really seeing that. I mean, it's kind of weird, and we saw it with gold today. You see the big open, and then it just kind of drizzled back and stays there. The Dow Jones today saw the same thing, and we've seen this for the past couple of days. You saw the Dow ending 64 points lower. It was down, I think the most was like 100.5 earlier in the day. It came back to about this level, and it just kind of stayed here for the rest of the day. So you can't tell me the people are not trading. The NASDAQ was down about 3 points at 38.15. I know who's trading. It's the plunge protection team. They're the ones that are doing the trading, and they're sitting there behind some computers and just plugging in the digits. And who knows what's being traded at any point in time. And if you have your money invested in that type of a system, Man, you're in trouble. You are in trouble. S&P down a buck at 1693. The 10-year yield is down just brief, a little bit, 0.02 at 22.63%. Earlier I saw the euro still trading about 135, about 1.35 on the euro. Did I mention oil? Al, were you down today? Oil was down today at 0.16 at 103.94. A lot of stuff is going on, Al.
Well, a lot of things are going on.
Absolutely,
we really
a lot
is.
Of things going on.
And we're
going to
talk a little, we'll get into this a little deeper into the program. But one of the things we're going to talk about is Nancy Pelosi's comment on the conflict in Congress over whether or not they should restrict Obamacare versus the government shutdown. And she's made the comment in Washington Times, and it was extraordinarily insightful, that this conflict is merely a pretext, an excuse for a larger debate that's going on, and the debate is over the extent of government. That's as much as she said. But once I saw it, I realized she was exactly right. She's telling us the truth. And what we are witnessing right now, if Pelosi is correct, and I believe she is, we are witnessing a conflict in government that is revolutionary. This is not your run-of-the-mill government theater where they put on a little song and dance and point fingers and one thing and another like that. This is way much bigger. Much more important. We'll get into that a little deeper in the end of the program. But there are extraordinary events taking place right now. And when you look at that and you realize that we are at an extraordinary moment, and we don't know which way this is going to go, at least not immediately, but there's a turning point. There's a change here now that we can see. And it tells us things that we should factor into our calculations on how we're going to invest in the future and what is likely to happen and where we can expect to profit and where we can expect to lose. And it goes to what's really going on with government right now. So what shall we do next,
Melody? Let's, before we go there, today the ADP released their numbers of course, the government shutdown that led the Labor Department to not produce the job report this week. And the job report's a very big number. It affects many financial markets here and around the world. So the ADP, and Mark Zandi, he's the chief economist of Moody's Analytics, ADP's partner on the report. They come out 2 days before the Fed comes out.
That's automatic data processing, right?
That is correct. Yeah. And they do payroll, and so they're partnered with Moody's. And
they are tethered to reality rather than visionary numbers.
They used to.
And
at one time they were, but, was it earlier this year they changed the way in which they projected their numbers because they were always so off. There was always such a difference between them and the Labor Department, so they decided to change their accounting ways, and now they're somewhat closer. Surprise, surprise. So, you don't know what you're getting anymore, folks.
You're getting
a lot of BS.
It's not ice cream. I can tell you that. It's not chocolate ice cream, folks. We know what we're getting.
But they came out and said that the U.S. businesses added about 166,000 new jobs in September. And that's, of course, according to the ADP. And it shows that the job recovery was softening. The biggest industry that added jobs, of course, was the service industry. They added about 149,000 new jobs over the month. And you had about 54,000 posts. You just had the breakdown in construction and some of the jobs that were lost in the financial markets were about 4,000 of those. Another interesting note is August job growth number by ADP actually was revised down.
They're always revised downward.
Absolutely.
This month's number will also, this most recent number, that will be revised downward next month.
Yep. They revised.
Nobody pays attention to the revisions.
But 159 from the original 176. That's a big.
You make. Why didn't they just wipe the whole thing out?
Yeah.
Would they leave 20,000, 27,000? Mm-hmm. Might just as well zeroed it out and said, "No, we got nothing this time."
Yeah. Oh. But so that's the number that they'll have to match when government starts up again, if they do start up again.
Well, they'll start up sooner or later. That's one of the things for sure. You meant nothing sure but death and government. Even taxes aren't absolutely certain, but government, it'll be there.
And it's amazing the little tidbits that if you listen very closely in some of these financial news programs, they were talking about the person in the Labor Department that was that's in charge of releasing the jobs reports on Fridays. His brother is a big wheel on Wall Street. And it's like, you know, people, you don't have a chance. it is so rigged, and there's so much, you know, information floating around before the markets are even opened. If you're doing good in your paper investments, I'd be getting out now.
Well, if you're doing, you know, no one's going to abandon something where they appear to be doing well. And
that's the problem. That's why they always lose money.
I know. Again, buy low, sell high. Means you got to buy when everybody else says that's stupid. That's when you buy. You got to sell when everybody else says that's smart.
Someone called me the other day and they said, and I know they listen to the program, so I hope you don't mind me sharing this. They says, well, you know, my mining shares are up. One's up 100%. Another one's up 50%. I said, are you making any money? No. Well. Then they are not up 100%, and they are not up 50%. And what you have to do when you're trading in shares is when you're making a profit, this does not apply to physical gold. Gold is you hold until this uncertainty, until we pass through this distraction and this destruction. Then there will be a time to sell, and you'll reinvest it into other investments that you can buy pennies and dimes on the dollar. But when you're dealing in paper and you're making a profit, what you do is you take you pull your principal out, or you pull your prop, you pull something out.
Well, it's the idea behind, you know, it's one of those things. There's always a debate on that kind of advice, because what it amounts to is you keep a balanced portfolio. You don't invest everything in one thing, and that's what people believe. You put some in this, some in that, some in something else, and that's on the one hand it's prudent. On the one hand it's prudent, but on the other hand it means you're never going to get hold of that one investment that just might make you spectacularly wealthy. One of your investments, if you've got half a dozen, one of your investments may do very well, but another two or three are going to do poorly. And by the time you get done averaging out half a dozen, you know, where are you? You probably haven't made that much money when you take your portfolio and you extend it. It protects you against significant losses by having a multitude of investments in your portfolio. You're pretty much protected against significant losses, but you're also prevented from making spectacular gains. The point then, and there's not an answer. I'm not saying that it's wrong. There's never a clear answer on this. But
no,
the alternative is you see something, you say, oh my gosh, this is going to go. And then you're all in. Now, are you correct? You know, you still remains to be seen if you're right or not. But if you can see that, that's where you make the big money.
But when you start making a profit, you start pulling out. It's the same thing. Wall Street is gambling. When you go to Las Vegas, you're sitting there playing 21, you make a profit, you pull those chips off.
You don't know anything about gambling. You don't. You're hot.
No.
You're hot, Melody. You just made that. You hit 21, double or nothing. Go for it, Melody. Come on. And that's human nature.
No, I'm being serious.
And then we wind up losing. We go for it and we win. We go for it again. We win. We double, and then bang. Oh.
Al, I'm trying to help the listeners understand how they should deal with paper investments. I got a call today on the dinar Iraqi. I mean, on the Iraqi dinar. that's been hanging around for a long time. Everybody's waiting for it to be revalued. People in sit waiting, thinking they have $1,500 and they're going to walk away with $2
million. Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's one of those things. I know people who've done it.
I know lots of my clients have done it.
Into it or whatever it was. And it's, but it's just a bet. It's like buying. It is a glorified, it's the same idea as going down to the 7-Eleven and buying a Texas lottery ticket. All right, you're probably not going to win, but if you do, you win big. All right, the odds are against it. It's, again, you're just dealing with human nature here. You're not dealing with rational thought. You're dealing with a certain amount of emotion on this thing. It's inherently irrational. Everybody knows it, but sometimes it's fun to be irrational. And I don't know, what are you going to do? People are having fun. That's what they want. They can have fun. But it's not the most sensible way to increase your wealth. If you're going to talk about wealth, you're going to get pretty serious.
The problem I have with the way they sell these DNRs, Al, is people believe they have the winning lottery number, and they're just waiting to be paid. Something totally different than buying the lottery and hoping you win.
I haven't bought a lottery ticket in years.
But there's a difference between buying it and hoping you win versus buying it and thinking you won and you're just waiting to be paid.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. I agree that there's people, a lot of people think that the Iraqi dinar is a rational investment. And
then they make promises to other people because they're told this on a regular basis that, oh, it's just a month away from being revalued. It's just a month. It's just days away. Well, it's been years. And in the problems that Iraq is having right now, they're just falling apart. And when countries revalue currencies, I don't think it's going to work out the same way.
No. It's improbable. It's one of these things. It's a foolishness. But, you know, it's not only a foolishness. Sometimes people need a straw to cling to.
Mm-hmm.
All right? They need something to give them a little bit of hope and a little bit of optimism and a little bit of encouragement, even if they themselves know in the secret of their heart, they know this is a bunch of crap. Oh, well, this isn't going to work. But still, it gives them something that they can feel good about. And sometimes, the way the world is, that's all you get. There's maybe an opportunity to feel good. I got a lottery ticket here. I think I'm going to win. I think this is the right number. I got Iraqi dinars. I think this is going to give. I'm going to get rich. Sometimes it helps to hold you together in a way that, even without the money, even if you don't win, it gets you through a difficult time. It's not an ideal situation, but sometimes it's psychological and it serves, you know, a purpose. And I'm not recommending it, but I recognize, you know, there's a certain amount of rationale behind this. There's other things that are served besides just trying to protect, preserve the wealth you have or perhaps gain additional wealth. And I don't know. Just the way people are. It goes to the numbers racket. It goes to Las Vegas. It goes to the people who bet on college football games. It's not just about the money. And as a result, they may get a kind of high off of this, and that may be enough for them. That high, that temporary high, they may be so low that they need that temporary high. But insofar as they are placing their bets on an emotional basis, on a hopeful basis, on a psychological basis, odds are they're going to lose those bets. On the other hand, if you want to get reasonable and you want to look at fundamentals, and you want to say, let's see, let's weigh this. And then you start to make your calculations and you begin to pick out and say, wait, this is a good investment. I think this is a good investment. Not an optimistic investment, not a psychological investment per se. But I think this one's going to work. That's a formula. That's a procedure. And people that embrace that kind of formula, they're going to tend to prosper over the years. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with my co-host, Melody Cederstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's the next, Melody?
Hey, they need to give us a call. Remember, this month we're also going to continue the drawing. We're going to have a Mint State 62 $10 Indian. Not a Liberty, but an Indian, a Mint State 62 $10 Indian. In fact, it is my favorite design on the coins. I know everybody thinks that the St. Gaudens was the most beautiful coin ever minted. It gets that name. But for me, I like the simplicity of the $10 Indian. I think it's a beautiful coin. The color of the gold is just gorgeous. So we're going to give a free one of those, a drawing on that one, and we'll also include another tube of 1 ounce silver Eagles. But you have to make your orders, and we'll have the drawing on Friday, November 1st will be the drawing for that. We've got great prices on all your gold and silver coin needs, but you got to give us a call. Visit our website, DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. We usually have some sort of a special in there. And you can listen to the program. So make sure you get to the website, folks, DGScoins.com. And if you'd like to have a question today, you can call us at 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. If you have a call for a question for Alfred or myself, or a comment, and if you want to send us an email, questions@DGScoins.com. questions@DGScoins.com.
Got an article here from the Washington Times. House rejects restoration of funds during shutdown for veterans' parks. With the government shutdown closing national monuments and sending federal office workers home, House Republicans changed their tactics Tuesday and tried to pass individual spending bills that they say would restore money to high-profile programs such as Veterans Affairs, National Parks, and the Smithsonian Institution. But House Democrats, backed by a presidential veto threat, blocked the bills, saying that while they supported the spending, it was unfair for Republicans to make them pick and choose from popular programs. All right, well, my point on all of this is here we have the Republicans that are at least willing to change a little bit and say, okay, we can spend on some of these programs. And the Democrats say, no, we can't. And this is ironic because in theory, the Democrats are the ones that say, we want to spend. The Republicans are the ones who say, no, we don't want to spend. And the Republicans are saying, let's spend. And the Democrats are saying, no, we won't. We want everything our way. And what it reminds me of is a marriage, the relationship between the Republicans and the Democrats. It seems like an increasingly bad marriage. And neither spouse can figure out how to please the other. Both insist that even if he or she gets what they want, something is still wrong and they're not going to settle until everything's perfect. I'm beginning to wonder, see in this article.
No, it reminds me of two. It reminds me of spoiled children.
Yeah, maybe you can put a bunch of analogies on it. But what I'm beginning to wonder is how long it may be before the Republican spouses can make peace with the Democrat spouses. And you can say the Republican sibling can make peace with the Democrat sibling. Children, you know, married
spoiled
couples, however you want to look at it.
Rats.
I'd originally supposed that the government shutdown would be over by early next week. Now I'm beginning to think it could last longer, maybe 2 weeks, maybe even a month. This isn't just politics anymore. This is ego. Some of these politicians won't agree to anything, no matter what. So we'll see how long these egos can dominate, how long before a compromise of some sort begins to somehow seem reasonable or at least necessary.
I can tell now, you.
Well, go ahead. Tell me.
I believe you'll start seeing the Republicans back down when you see the stock market weaken. I mean, weaken further than what it is, because they know if that stock market begins to fall, I mean, you already have the dollar breakdown below 80. I think that's significant. We'll have to see if they have some sort of a rebound tomorrow. But when the markets begin to shake in a little bit more, I think the Republicans will begin to
cave,
because that is the one thing that'll keep them.
I agree that that's one thing that might move them one way or the other.
No.
But initially, this first article is the first one I saw that I noticed today, and they're just saying, well, you know, the two sides aren't going to agree no matter what. Now, maybe they'll agree tomorrow. I don't know when they're actually going to agree, but I'm beginning to think this may be more drawn out than I'd originally supposed. But here's another article, and this is the one that really rings my bell from the Washington Times. And this is where House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi offers some insight into the shutdown. And I think the insight she offers, I don't think she did this intentionally. I think she kind of did it accidentally. I don't think she realized what she was saying at the time. If she had, I doubt if she would have made the comments. But nevertheless, here's the headline from the Washington Times. The headline is, Nancy Pelosi raises ghost of George Washington to condemn GOP. Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, visibly angry with Republicans for standing fast on their opposition to Obamacare and forcing the Democrat-controlled Senate to enter government shutdown, said, "What the Speaker is doing is doubling or tripling down on a path that was always intended to take us to shutting down the government. The GOP has wiggled this way and that to keep being very resourceful to come up with ways to shut down the government. Because, as Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said, they don't believe in government. They're anti-government ideologues." Now, that's a bunch of bunk. No one in Washington, Republican or Democrat, is an anti-government ideologue. But some Tea Party members of the Republican Party are anti-big government ideologues. Right? And there's a difference. It's not against all government, but it's against big government. And I'm saying praise the Lord for those Tea Party members. Some Republicans are actually starting to behave like Republicans rather than rhinos, Republicans in name only, and Republicrats, terms we've all heard, where the two parties are so united that there's no difference between them, we're beginning to see a genuine difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And these Tea Party people still believe in government, but they don't believe in unlimited government. And that's the difference between them and the socialists in the Democratic Party. And I'm not saying everybody in the Democratic Party is socialist, or at least not knowingly so, but a lot of them are. Pelosi continued. She said, this is a proxy fight for the debate on the extent of government. And that has been a debate in the history of this country. Now, a little bit incoherent last half sentence, but she says, this is a proxy fight. She means we're fighting over Obamacare versus government shutdown, but that's just a proxy fight. That's not the real issue. The real issue is the extent of government, and she is right. This is a profound, profound insight. She goes on and she complains, but to say no government, that's what President George Washington warned against. And no one is arguing for no government. But some people are arguing for less government. And again, Pelosi is exactly and amazingly correct. I'm surprised she let the cat out of the bag. This battle about Obamacare and the government shutdown is not a simple matter of political theater. It's not he said, she said. Just as Pelosi admitted, it's really about the extent of government. It's about whether we will have big, bigger, and finally biggest government. Or should we return to the limited government intended by our founders? Insofar as this controversy is really about the extent of government, it's a watershed event. You understand that? This is not a small thing. If the Tea Party Republicans win, and they may have enough public support to do so, this conflict may put an end to big government for a generation or more. If the Democrats win on the other side, on the other hand, big government will persist a while longer. But even if the Democrats win, the Tea Party Republicans will have fired a shot heard round the world. The truth of this matter may be that even if this Obamacare government shutdown controversy does not mark the end of big government, it may nevertheless mark the beginning of the end. It may well be that government has finally spent too much, supported too many special interests, and gone too deeply into debt. The Tea Party, at least, appears to have had enough. And there's a very good chance that the Tea Party is not a fluke. It may be that the Tea Party is in ascendance, while the true liberal big government Democrats are in decline. And it has to be that way. When you stop to think about it, it has to be that way. Why? Because the government is so far in debt that it can't go much deeper into debt. We're reaching a moment where even government will be forced to admit what can't be paid won't be paid. Ideology aside, doesn't matter whether you're a fascist, you're a socialist, you're a communist, you're a Republican, whatever you are. Ideology aside, government is too broke to grow bigger. If big government can't be ended with moral arguments, it will nevertheless be ended by financial reality. Big government is just about too broke to grow any bigger. Big government is so broke, it may soon be forced to grow smaller. I hope the Tea Party sticks to their guns and refuses to allow government to reopen unless Obamacare is at least postponed. If doing so causes government size to diminish, the initial result may be painful. As we lose the government of, as we lose the benefit of government's economic stimulus. But the result will eventually be a blessing as we lose the liability of feeding the government parasites. Without government constantly predating on us, we might return to optimism and even prosperity. And part of my point is the Obamacare government shutdown is not just another instance of political kabuki theater. There's a revolution taking place in Congress and in the American body politic. This is no game. This is big time, winner take all revolution that just might end the Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal that started in 1933. We've had it now for, 80 years? And its government has grown and grown and grown, and our economy has grown weaker and weaker and weaker. this controversy that we see taking place between Obamacare and the government shutdown. This is important. It's huge. We should all be excited by this struggle. We should be excited by the revolution that is becoming manifest in our Congress. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult, maybe even painful. But I'm saying hooray. It's about time, maybe way past time. But at minimum, watch this controversy as evidence of a revolution and not just political theater. That's my point.
It's been a long time since we've had optimism, I believe, in this country. And folks, it's so important. You've got to call and support these people. You've got to let them know that they are making a difference, that they're not there all by themselves.
Yeah.
You got to let them know that you will vote for them if they go through with this, that we need them. And, you know, maybe we have gotten to that point, Al. I mean, you know, for so many years we say, oh, there's no difference between the two. This is just, as you mentioned, it's just, you know, it's just theatrics. Tomorrow it's going to be business as usual. Eventually they'll pull the skeletons and give a big enough payday. And we'll be back to, they made their little point and, you know, it's going to be business as usual. But the one thing that you also made very clear is there's no money.
Yeah. The game can't continue if the government's
broke.
There's
no money.
Right. There's going to be a break. Even regardless of what your ideology is, government must grow smaller because it doesn't have the money to grow larger. I don't believe it can just maintain a static condition. Say, okay, this is how big we are and this is how big we're going to stay forever.
And nobody
it's
wants,
either going up or it's going down. It's like everything else. There's no
nobody,
status, there's no stasis.
There's no other country out there to help us. Mm-hmm. Heck, they don't even want our treasuries. The Fed's buying $85 billion a month.
And they're the only ones who do.
So,
all right? And there's great implication in that. And later on in the program, well, the second half, we'll see if we can get into that. We'll talk about the implications. But one other point. You and I were talking during the break about California. Mm-hmm. Is passing laws to tell the federal government that they're not going to, they're passing state laws and say we're not going to be bound by these federal laws. Now, I don't remember which ones you were talking about. Tell me which laws you'd brought up, or do you remember?
Jerry Brown signed into law, actually signs the ban on NDAA detentions.
Okay. They're not going to enforce it.
The NDAA detentions.
National Defense Authorization Act. I get that. Okay, so they're not going to do the national, they're not going to enforce this. This is, he's not the only one who's doing it. There are other states. I think Missouri is one of them, and we've seen some evidence, maybe Montana or Wyoming, I don't recall clearly, where they have passed state laws where they're just saying, look, we're not going to enforce the federal law on this matter or this matter. This is evidence that parallels what we're seeing in Congress right now. The Congress, there is a revolution going on against big government. And we may not be at the end of that revolution, but we are at the beginning. People are beginning to say, even California, even the People's Republic of California is saying, look, the government's gone too far. We're not enforcing the damn laws. This is a sign of the times. We are in the midst of an extraordinary revolution, and we need to look at, and I think we need to look at the events from that perspective. These are not isolated events. This is evidence of a mounting wave, and I'm excited about it.
Well,
you know, it's the sort of thing, and I'm kind of gleeful, but I know I'm also a little apprehensive. There's going to be trouble. But just the same, I think we might be headed back in what I regard as a good direction. Something you wanted to say, Melody?
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is huge because I think California, considering their relationships to Washington,
mm-hmm.
It's not like Missouri or, you know, Montana. I mean, those are states you can understand, even though there are a lot of Democrats in Missouri, but it's still, you have St. Louis there and part of Kansas City. But on the other hand, California... That's a different story to see them cut the strings.
I understand. You expect that sort of thing perhaps out of Wyoming or Montana or even Missouri.
Right.
But California?
Yep.
That's strange, right? That's revolutionary. Well, we're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be right back.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We're here at the heart of the revolution. Got a revolution going on here, folks. Whether they like it or not, they're going broke, and it means they can't continue to play Big Brother. All right? It's not going to be easy. Government's not going to give up that role easily, but they don't have the money to continue to play big government. And that means this is going to end. It can end for moral reasons. It can end for political reasons, but it will end for financial reasons. So what do we got, Melody?
Now, here's a question, and you know, it's the opposite side of the coin. Is this shutdown just an illusion to take our attention from our and world economy, as well as the Middle East war and Iran, Israel tension, since the Democrats and Republicans are different sides of the same coin? Aren't they all controlled by the banksters?
Well, it's hard to say. I don't doubt that some people certainly would think that's the truth of the matter. It may even be that some people in Congress think that's the truth of the matter. But I'm looking at this and I'm saying, no, I think we have a real revolution on our hands right now. And I don't mean that it's over. It's going to be over soon. But I think the beginning of this revolution has now become apparent. And Nancy Pelosi, when she points out this is about the extent of government, that's what it's about. Shall we have big government as implied by Obamacare, or shall we have limited government as implied by the shutdown? This is what the heart of this debate is. This is why some people say they've never seen the two parties so polarized and opposed to each other. We are beginning to see Republicans acting like Republicans. And I don't mean all of them, but enough of them, some of them, they're beginning to be against big government. instead of just being a Democrat light party. And there is a real struggle taking place. Again, we see it in California there and Missouri and a couple other states where they're saying we're not going to obey the federal laws. This is not just theater. This isn't just trivial. It's not just, it may have the effect of diverting our attention from other issues, but we have to watch that those other issues don't also divert our attention from what I think is the real essence of this struggle in Congress. We're watching a revolution, and if you watch the other things instead of watching this, if you don't perceive and say, my God, we're seeing a revolution, if you don't catch that, you may miss what's going on, in my opinion. That's my take.
Rand Paul, he came out, and he's really saying the same thing. He says, I think I was elected to stand up and say, you know what, the emperor has no clothes.
Exactly.
And we have to point that out. So really, when people get caught up in the shutdown, I try to tell them, well, look, this isn't about a shutdown. This isn't about temporary inconveniences of the government shutdown. Mm-hmm. This is about whether or not a society or a civilization can borrow $1 trillion every year without ramifications. So then the question is this a revolution or is this just a collapse? Is this the beginning of the collapse?
Well,
or are they the same? Which comes first?
I agree with that. It's like you can say that about any revolution. You know, I doubt that any revolution you can point to in mankind's history took place for a single reason. And I doubt that any economic collapse took place for simply economic reasons. I'll bet they were all accompanied by governmental corruption, by a philosophy, a governmental philosophy that ultimately proved to be unworkable. They contribute to the economic collapse. The revolutions are going to be, they're going to go hand in hand with the economic collapse, which may be the cause of other problems. What I'm trying to, there's a synergy here, and it's not, it's like love and marriage, you know, you can't have one without the other. Go together like the horse and carriage, can't have one without the other. It's the same thing. Revolution and economic collapse. I doubt if you can really have one without the other. And you can debate which one is the real cause, but the two of them are going to probably hit simultaneously.
So I'm going to tell the listeners, give us a call, get ready, get prepared. And, you know, if you've been putting off your food and your water and your other preparations, it's...
Time might be running short.
Mm-hmm. Preparedness, yes.
Got an article here from Bill Holter, or an excerpt from one of his articles. And he wrote, all the way back in the 1990s, I noticed the strange trading in gold. Whenever anything bad happened, and what he's trying to do is he's trying to explain, why did gold go down $40 an ounce yesterday? It should have gone up. Gold has always been a barometer that when things are difficult, when things are bad, the price of gold goes up. It's always been that way. Huh? Now, he's saying, okay, yesterday when they shut the government down, in theory that's a bad thing. I guess there's some debate about that. But in theory, that's a bad thing. And the price of gold should have gone up. Instead, it went down $40. But he says, all the way back in the 1990s, I noticed strange trading in gold. Whenever anything bad happened or was announced, gold would go down. In almost perfect fashion, any negative financial news would be reacted to by a drop in the price of gold. Exactly opposite of what gold should be doing. Exactly opposite of what we expect out of gold. And I think he's making a good price. A good point. The government has tried to strip us of our understanding of our reliance on gold as a barometer for what's happening in the economy. They've tried to separate gold and reduce it to a mere commodity rather than a monetary metal. Now, Andy Hoffman, he also explained yesterday's smackdown, the $40 gold smackdown, and he's talking about the barometer of bad tidings. And gold and silver, they're the barometer. If there's bad news, gold and silver go up. We got bad news yesterday. Gold and silver shouldn't have went up. Instead, they went down. He points out that the government has been, when they furloughed 800,000 government workers, should be bad news for the economy. All right? Technically, we have, and the gold price of gold should have therefore gone up. Now, technically, we have, as of Monday, we have 800,000 more unemployed than we had last Friday. Now, these government workers are still supposed to be paid whenever they get back to work. But on the other hand, they're not working right now. Therefore, they're almost certainly spending less today than they would have spent if they could still count on the next paycheck on October 15th. Less spending by 800,000 people should slow the economy. That should be bad news. Price of gold should have gone up. Didn't. Went down. Worse yet, this is Andy Hoffman again, and he says, worse yet, the ramifications for a treasury market already under immense pressure and thus unable to withstand even modest quantitative easing tapering are incalculable, particularly as the U.S. dollar itself is notably sagging despite the so-called recovery the mainstream media incessantly speaks of. Now, he makes an interesting point here, and he reminds us of something we have to keep at the forefront. In the final analysis, in a true free market, the price of gold denominated in fiat dollars is a measure of the relative health of the fiat dollar in relation to gold. Huh? When the price of gold goes up, more than anything else, it signals that the value and purchasing power of the fiat dollar is going down. When the price of gold goes down, more than anything else, it signals that the value and purchasing power of the fiat dollar is going up. The price of gold has fallen from $1,900 2 years ago to $1,300 today. That's a 30% loss in the perceived value of gold and a 30% gain in the perceived value of the fiat dollar. We can wonder why the price of gold suffered such a significant loss over the past 2 years. That's amazing. That's confusing. That's the sort of thing that, what the heck happened there? And so long as we focus on the value of gold, we may remain mystified. But if we instead focus our attention on the value of fiat dollars, we may find a little more understanding. All right? Instead of focusing on the head side of the coin, let's take a look at the tail side, the fiat dollar side, and see what's really going on. Over the past 2 years, buyers of U.S. treasuries have so diminished that today 80% of all U.S. treasuries are purchased by the Federal Reserve. Just as the Federal Reserve is purchasing most of the mortgage-backed securities, many of the mortgage-backed securities are known to be toxic assets. Can the same be said for U.S. treasuries? Why has the world abandoned U.S. treasuries? If virtually no one will buy U.S. treasuries under the Federal Reserve, isn't it that evidence that the value of the fiat dollar is declining? I believe it is. How can a rational world display such obvious and undeniable contempt for U.S. treasuries, but still be presumed to display increasing respect for the U.S. dollar? How can the dollar go up while the treasuries are going down? That's the question. Because if the dollar really increased 30% value over the course of the last 2 years, that's a 15% return on investment per year. That's a great return on investment. If you bought a bond that was worth, say, $100,000 2 years ago, and regardless of what the price of the bond was on the market, the dollars, the premium on the principal on the bond had increased in value by 15% each year, that would be a heck of a deal. People should be flocking in to buy more U.S. bonds because the dollar is going up. If you had $100,000 invested in the bond, now you'd have today, 2 years later, you'd have $150,000 in purchasing power in that bond. You would have increased you would have increased your purchasing power in the bond by 15% per year just because of the increase in dollar value. That increase in dollar value is manifested by the fall in the price of gold. If we believe that fall, value of the dollar has increased 15% on average per year for the last 2 years. If we believe the dollar increased by 15% per year for the last 2 years, why aren't people buying U.S. treasuries? Why is it that the only significant buyer for U.S. treasuries is the Federal Reserve? The answer to these questions is that you cannot have the dollar gaining value at the same time that bonds are going down. Right? If the dollar's gaining value, if it really gained 30%, bonds should be going up. People should be scrambling for them. The fact that they're not is evidence that the dollar has not truly gained value over the last 2 years. And what we're seeing is not evidence of a rational but free market. We're seeing evidence of a manipulated market, an unfree market, where government or people in positions of power are causing the illusion of an increase in the value of the paper dollar. And they're doing it at the expense of those who've invested in gold. It's an illusion, and it can't be sustained, and it can't work. It won't be enough to revive the economy. We've got 2 years of declining gold price, or excuse me, declining bond prices. We've got 2 years of it to show. This is not the real deal. We are being fooled. We are being bamboozled. We might not be seeing kabuki theater in the government's debate on Obamacare versus government shutdown. That may not be theater, but what we're seeing, the price of gold is. It's being manipulated, and all of this points to the idea that sooner or later, the truth must out. The government is running out of coins. It cannot continue to diminish the price of gold and still hope that anybody's going to buy any of their bonds. It's not going to happen. The world can't continue to sustain this lie. We're coming to the end of the line. When we're going to get there is unclear. But we're getting there. It's like riding on a railroad train. We know what the destination is, and every one of you knows it. We just don't know when we're going to arrive, right? There may be some bumps along the road. There may be the snow has blocked the railroad at some point going through the mountains. Hard to say what's going to happen. But we all know what the destination is going to be. And as long as we do, it becomes, you know, irrational to suppose that gold is not a good investment. Fiat dollars have to go down. They have to. It happens to all fiat currencies. They've all gone down. They've all expired ultimately in hyperinflation. And the idea that this time it's different, or that this time the government can sustain the fiat currency indefinitely, I don't believe it. And I doubt that many of you do either. And if that's true, then you have to look at these circumstances. Sit back and say, you know, gold is so cheap right now. The price is so artificially low. You got to be crazy not to take advantage of this opportunity. I know your mom's not going to buy it, and your dad's not going to buy it, and the brothers and the sisters, and they're all going to say you're crazy, but you look at it, you look at the fundamentals, you know where the train is going, you just don't know when it's going to get there, but wouldn't it be best to get off that train with a fistful of gold or silver in your pockets than it would be with a fistful of paper documents, paper debt instruments, paper dollars, paper stocks, paper bonds? Wouldn't it be better to have that tangible wealth in your pocket when we get to the end, the destination that we are certainly headed toward? And, of course, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. Got about 25 seconds, Melody. Is something you want to add?
Nope. I was just going to say we're just about at the end of the program today. And if folks need any help in purchasing the gold and silver, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website, dgscoins.com. We'll be back tomorrow. Wendy Wilson will be joining us for the first 20 minutes of the program tomorrow.
And in the meantime, we're just where Robert, he didn't want to go on the air, but he just wanted to pass on that he really appreciates the show. Robert, we appreciate you listening to the show. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, good Lord bless you, Melody, Robert, Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's you.